Great honor to be talking to you today. As Katriina said, I will be talking to you about insights-driven concept design, and they're really the insights being the core of it, the driving force. What I'll be talking about is, you know, I need to put a disclaimer in the beginning. I don't bring it from the academic perspective. I really come from the kind of applied side. So I'm sure that there's different theories on it. I did a quick Google. You know, I wanted to see what's the status of concept design theory at the moment. And I find it quite, you know, I find it quite poor. So it's quite a bit of kind of branding your own idea. So companies do it also. They will brand their own idea. You know, and they're kind of, you know, and they'll say, this is what you can buy from us, you know, and they'll ISO certify it, you know, and they'll say, this is very unique, you know, but if you compare them side by side, you'll find out that they're quite comparable. So I'll just make a disclaimer here that this is my point of view in it, you know, that I've learned through my work and, you know, practices that work and don't work, you know, so you're free to kind of apply it according to your case that you're working on, as opposed to kind of taking it as a kind of a solid theory that this is what you must do. So if I start a little bit about myself, Katriina said, I work for the Nokia Corporation at the moment, and there I'm inside of the competitive intelligence team that serves the corporate strategy. Before that, I worked in innovation, so I really have this sort of a path that you wonder, you know, how did I started my art studies in Amsterdam in a art and design academy, very much an alternative place, and, you know, all of a sudden I find myself in a very kind of hard business environment. But there's a kind of a logical path in it. I started out architectural design. I graduated with an MA in interior architecture from Dyke, eventually, so from the University of Art and Design, Helsinki, nowadays part of Aalto University. And I had already started my studies in the media lab at the same time, and I did another master's degree there. And what I did was I specialized in interactive environments, so this sort of ambient intelligent environments and experience design for those. And that led me to go and work for Philips Design in the Netherlands, because they were the sort of business that was really, really focusing on that at the time. You know, from research side, they had come up with this ambient intelligence, and at the design side, they were trying to make a business out of it, the sort of ambient experience design, as they called it at the time. And in the medical environment, they actually made really interesting stuff that even has on the medical kind of side an impact. So it's measurable impact. So it's interesting to look into that if you're interested in how kind of design and experience design, and in this case service design, can bring kind of measurable benefits even to medical environments. So that was really groundbreaking. But, so that was what was going on at the time, and then they wanted to kind of expand on that into other environments. So I did a project there, actually, and that led me in contact with your last week's presenter, Matthew. We were in collaboration with the Beale Institute that he worked in at the time with Alexander Manu in Toronto. So it's funny, you know, that Katriina should bring in another lecturer from kind of this sort of odd international ring. So then what I learned working for Philips Design, I had an honor to work with really world-leading professionals. They had streamlined their processes. So I really, you know, what I'll be talking about today is really, I learned my foundation there. You know, it was remarkable what I got to do. And I worked on projects that were delivering innovation. So delivering innovation, either, you know, scoping out the future, deciding, okay, you know, what could future of hotels be like in 10 years' time, you know? And why don't we define it, you know? Because I'm one of these believers that, you know, you can design the future, your favorable future. As a business, you know, you can say, well, this is the direction that we should be going to. You look at the kind of palette, the certain kind of foresighting work, and look at the opportunities, and you say, you know what, this is the future that we want to play a part in. You know, and then you can start prototyping it and making it real. So this was some of the projects I got to work on, or then really short scale, you know, like really like, you know what, we've got an innovation, we see a business opportunity, we don't have this sort of a product line yet, but you know what, we're going to make it our business, you know? And so you accelerate, go into the sort of venture mode, and besides the kind of actual business streams, you have your own kind of project, and you know, you bring the product to market 10 months faster than the normal product line would do. So actually these were the kind of projects I work on, and I never actually worked on the TVs or the shavers or, you know, that sort of their bread and butter. After working for Philips for 2 years, my contract came to an end, and I realized that also that design was not the environment that I wanted to be in. I'm much more interested in the business side. And one thing led to another, and I ended up working for Nokia. And I worked for actually the sort of the N series, as you might remember it, the original smartphones. Of course, we understand a smartphone completely differently nowadays, you know. But that was you know, when they brought out the sort of imaging capabilities for devices, you know, and bringing the internet into devices, you know, a really compact kind of technically very leading edge products. And at the time, the business was already kind of, they were seeing that, okay, you know what, it's not going so well, you know, and we're lacking the innovations. So within the product and portfolio planning, so really in the business itself, they started the sort of innovation group. And, you know, I was the innovation group, you know, to start with. And then the team expanded, and we worked on all sorts of interesting projects. And I think that the kind of the most interesting stuff that I got to work on while I was in the innovation group was I had the privilege of having a very close contact with the Nokia Research Center and their projects. And I was in some of the projects, I was in the steering groups. And in the steering group, my role was to bring the business view into it and see how we could take those innovations and productize them so that there is a kind of a end user value in it. So how do we bring those to the consumers? And I'll be telling you kind of briefly a case at the end of this project where this lecture, where it was a project that we were actually productizing nanotechnology and kind of trying to see how could we bring that to the consumers with a shorter time frame than it was seen at that point. So what are the smallest steps in between that we could start productizing already? So I'll show that. That's a dream case. That's really a dream case of how you apply what I'm going to be talking about now to you. So that's a little bit about my background. Do you have any questions at this point, or, you know, something? Was I unclear about something? All right, I guess either you're all flabbergasted and think, oh, I don't dare to say anything. Anyway, so a little bit about design processes. Yes, there's one more thing to say about this, you know, what I'll be talking about today. You're going to come across a whole bunch of kind of old school designers who are going to say, nonsense. You know, who needs insights, you know? Like, I know it. You know, I'm a designer, I know it, you know? And of course, as a designer, you need a little bit of arrogance, because you come across a lot of kind of people from the business side who want to kind of cut corners, you know, and don't want to invest, you know, they want to kind of see, you know, the cheap way out of it, you know, to make a good profit, you know, and pay little. You'll see engineers going like, you know, what difficult, can't be bothered. You know, so as a designer, there needs to be a little bit kind of arrogance that you hold your ground, you know, because otherwise they'll just bulldoze over you. But there'll be also those who just don't understand, you know, and they're used to kind of, you know, I'll be a little bit crude, you know, but they're used to kind of designing this sort of things. And you could call it designing, but actually you could also just call it styling. So the product is the same. It is not changing anywhere. You don't need any insights for it. You just need to kind of understand what are the kind of trends in materials, you know, and kind of a little bit different mechanics, you know, but you don't really need insights for that, you know. But then they're not necessarily creating something new. They're not kind of going, you know what, there's a possibility of something completely new out there. Let's go ahead and do it, you know. So I understand a little bit from that perspective. So if I draft a little bit of the kind of process that this sort of insights-driven concept design fits into. You think in the beginning, you know, like I'll just name it one thing, companies name it differently, but you'll have like a research and analysis phase. You know? And here, you know, okay, of course you'll have a topic to begin with. You know, there is a topic that you might, you know, that you will start with, you know, that this is kind of like, this is the area that we want to kind of develop a new service for. And then you start researching and analyzing a little bit. You need to do your ground research, you know, and this is what I'll be talking about. You know, what is it that we're talking about? What is this field that we work in, you know? And then after you've done that, you know, you can kind of bring your, you know, you'll produce a whole bunch of deliverables, you know, that tell about the research and analyze it in the point of view. So what's the relevance to our topic here? And then basically you can go to ideation. You know, and this could be a bunch of workshops where you're kind of coming up with the, you know, like developing the idea, you know, and there's all sorts of methods. I won't go into the methods, but rather, you know, that's just the phase, you know. And then after the ideation, you know, what you can do is, and this is really nice. So I was wondering whether I would do it here or here. It depends on the case. But you'll make your vision. Create your statement. This topic means this. This is what we're going for. Yeah? And after that, you can go into kind of, you can then create the concept. You know, and then you can create your concept. And basically, it's often so that this is where I lose interest. You know, I can work until here, and that's, you know, then I find that, okay, it's done. You know, I can oversee the implementation, but I'm not interested in, like, the designing of it. Really, the implementation, the design that follow, you know, I can oversee this, but I have little to contribute here anymore. On the detail level, then, you know, I'm not the most suitable here. So I'm, you know, I find this fascinating. This is fantastic stuff, you know, to really understand what is the core that we're talking about here, you know. And then in the ideation, when you start kind of, you know, flying with the ideas and going, yeah, you know, it could be like this and that, you know. And then, obviously, you have like here. Then you need to kind of filter. Cluster, you know, so okay, you know what, nice idea, maybe not relevant, these ones, yeah, link into one another, fantastic, build into a larger thing, should we make a scenario out of it, start playing it through. So one other thing is, you know, like, why do you do this? You know, let's keep it a little bit interactive. You know, are you with me now? You know, can you follow me what we're doing here? Yeah? Great. So any ideas? Why would we be doing something like this? I touched on a little bit, you know, but let's collect a little bit of the reasons why are we doing this sort of research analysis?
In order to have a slight idea of the direction where research goes.
Yeah? Anything more? Please.
To get an idea of what has been done so far.
Okay, yes. Contextualize yourself. Yeah. Okay.
Well, if you develop something for human beings, then maybe it's good to start with human beings.
Oh, yeah. Nice, huh? What would you do with the humans? What would you like to know?
Try to get them to tell stories, how they'd be behaving in different situations.
Okay.
Around the topic or issue.
Yeah.
Not direct answers to any questions, but more of the behavior stories and things which they kind of
Nice. Okay. Any more? Okay. And, all right. So this is already a nice list. Very good. Thanks. So basically, this is one of the things that, you know, it's a good starting point, yeah? Because now you can detach yourself. You're no longer designing for yourself, putting yourself in the shoes of, like, you know, okay, I'll be the end user, so what do I need, you know? You might not be the end user. So very good, you know, the humans, and then what's been done before. You know, I think as a student, at least I used to make the mistake of, like, thinking I'm so unique, you know, nothing's been done in this field before. You know, and how wrong was I? You know, so obviously, you know, you start digging around, you know, or the older teacher comes to you and says, well, you know, if I was you, I'd check out these artists, you know, and they've done this, and, you know, and then, you know, so I've come across this, you know, interacting with students later on, also younger students, you know, that I'm like, well, you know, did you go to the library, you know? So this is something, you know, and I think businesses do it too often also, you know, so they just don't do the sort of benchmark, you know, of whatever it is, you know? So... one of the things that I would, you know, what's been done before, you know, so if I leap a little bit further into, so indeed, you know, so obviously the unit that I work in right now gives a clue already, you know, competitive intelligence. What is the competition doing? Competition. What is the competition doing? Yeah? And the kind of, you know, you have to, of course, then, you know, understand what is your forthcoming service, you know? So where might this competition actually be, you know? So envision it a little bit. Also be a little bit radical, you know, because you can't really foresee completely. So, you know, there's the competition. And then, you know, what's really interesting also is adjacent markets. Adjacent markets. Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So, what would be a good example? Well, it's not your direct competition, but it's actors in the field who kind of do similar things, you know, or they might have like a, it's a completely different service, but some of the behaviors are similar, or, you know, that you can see that there's something comparable, but they're not your direct competition, you know? So, you know, spot out those ones, you know? You might learn a lot about, you know, like you might see a really nice service concept that on the kind of structural level is really interesting for you to know about, but they do a completely different kind of service and you'll never be in competition with them. So that's one of those worthwhile to look into. What I always find fantastic to look into is what's happening in the arts. I try whenever I have a chance. Of course, you know, I live in Helsinki, so to keep kind of sensible budgets, you know, I look at what's around, you know, and what can I go to easily. So one of the things I've gone to for years is Pixel Lake in Helsinki. Actually, 10 years ago, I was even an artist at Pixel Lake, but that's a long time ago. But, you know, find out what's happening in the arts, you know, because I find that artists, you know, with the sort of drive that you have, you just need to do something, end up developing technologies well before it was done in kind of any kind of commercial environment. So you can find also, you know, you can find kind of interesting interaction concepts, or you can find interesting ways of kind of presenting information, or, you know, you name it, you'll find it there. And what I find also is that I found from arts field technical solutions that I can spar our engineers with, like, you know, they tell me, oh, can't do it. You know, I'm like, how can you say can't do it? It was done in 94, you know? So a little bit of this sort of like, hey, you know, let's not be lazy. So that's a fantastic kind of place to look into. Good. So that's a little bit like what has been done so far. I might add something to there later. So one more thing that I noticed missing from here, and I wonder if you look at this, you know, like now that I look in my notations, in your kind of research and analysis, it's got to do with, well, it's a huge thing, actually. I'll just, you know, rather than tease you with it, I'll just write it down because it's humongous. Trends. Because, you know, trends is everything, yeah? And, you know, of course, the easy way, you know, easy thing that comes into mind is, of course, you know, style. You know, fashion, that sort of things. But that's just one thing, you know? So that's kind of, you know, you've got your design trends, and that's kind of got to do with form, you know, what kind of, you know, right now we're very much living this sort of era of, you know, like this sort of uniplastic type of, you know, seamless, screwless, openingless type of era, yeah? And this style, you know, if you look at that design, and what we're talking about here is we're talking about colors and materials, but we're also looking at the style, you know, the shape and how it's been put together in that sense, you know? And if you look at that, and then you look at this Lenovo laptop, you know, with holes everywhere and seams everywhere and screws and, you know, completely not this sort of unibody idea. So that's one example. So what kind of design trends do we have in that sense coming up? What we also have really strong technology up and coming new technologies, how could it be realized? You know, let's look further ahead. What kind of technologies are coming up? You know, you might be kind of, so the case I'll be talking about today is you know, very much technology was really important in it. So what kind of trends do we have, kind of emerging trends, you know, what are getting stronger, you know, more viable, you know, when is the production technology there that we could actually do it, you know, when can we start prototyping, you know, so you can start already kind of road mapping, you know, the technical platform that your service is on, for example. How do you deliver it, you know? So what kind of technologies are coming up, you know, that you can anticipate? So let's add that, you know, here. Strong ruling or weak and strengthening, you know, so what's happening with this? Or is it just weak and then, you know, it just disappears? Like an interesting trend was a couple of years ago, this sort of stereoscopic 3D, you know, that everyone was like, oh, what's going to happen with it? You know, and you saw this sort of devices emerging where you can take kind of stereoscopic pictures, you know, and they had auto stereoscopic displays so that you can see the kind of 3D stereoscopic image without actually having to wear any glasses, you know, and it's something that, you know, I've been working with for a long time. You know, even in the media lab, we made a stereoscopic movie that was auto stereoscopic movie that was really fantastic. So you know, it's something that I've been kind of really passionate about. So I've been following it, and I was on maternity leave, and in April I came back to work, and it disappeared completely. No one's talking about it anymore. So it was like growing, disappeared. You know. So now we're waiting again, you know, it's like, you know, in the 50s it came, you know, in the 70s it came, you know, that, you know, so interesting to keep an eye on and kind of somehow keep that sort of palette going, you know, opportunities. So what we have about the humans also, you know, there are certain kind of consumer trends. We can see how people behave, you know, what kind of needs are emerging or practices are emerging, you know, and this sort of sociocultural trends. So these are also really, really important to map. Red pen. Yes. Right. So good. So this is you know, I find that this is now already quite a full palette, you know, of, you know, options that you can choose from. Maybe this is a good moment to talk about a little bit about more about the humans that were mentioned, because when it comes to service design, there's one thing that is really important. Oh, maybe I'll add it here. Stakeholders. I fear that that's going to fade a little bit. I'll use another color. Stakeholders. So maybe you could contribute a little bit, you know? Can you think of kind of what kind of stakeholders can you think? If you're kind of, you have a service design case going on, you know, and you'd like to, you know, let's identify some stakeholders.
Conceived, it had a stronger therapeutic aspect to it. So originally it was thought that maybe some clinics, or psychological clinics to be exact, or even greater organizations in responsible for those might be interested in sponsoring it. And also, since it was a legacy from that other course, Protomo, the idea actually was mentioned as a possible partner, and also since we had the representatives of those people there, also the, what was its name again, like the new company Hatchery of a Thousand Lakes, in, of course that's translated, but in Finnish it was Tuhansienjärven uusi yrityskeskus.
Onko se jo hautoma, yrityshautoma?
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'll help you a little bit, you know, in kind of what I've identified. The thing is, why I'm asking you is that in every case, they're different, you know? So it's really like case by case, who are your stakeholders? Make an analysis, I tell you, make an analysis in the very beginning of your project. Map out your stakeholders and ask what's in it for them. First of all, what I've learned over the years, it's really funny, you know, starting from a kind of a completely arts background, you know, where's the money? You know, where's the money? Who's the customer? Who's the paying customer? You know, where's the money? So, you know, think about it, you know. So, I'll draw the dollar sign. Really, you know, like it's really important, you know, because that's you know, that's whose needs you're serving. Yeah. So, but, you know, then you'll have a whole bunch of other stakeholders. You'll have the customer stakeholders. try to understand those, because the customer is serving someone, you know? And it might not be the end user, yeah? So you've got the end user then. And you don't have just one end user, you have end users. Yeah? So you've got the end user. Suppose you have kind of you're building a service, you know, that you'll have those who kind of come, really, they come to buy. Yeah? So that's where you're kind of optimizing the service for. But then you'll have like end users who just come to hang out or who come to kind of feel the experience. They might not have the money. You know, if you think of teenagers who hang out in shopping malls, you know, what a nuisance. But at the same time, you can't kick them out. You know, you need to keep them in because, you know, they have a little bit in their pocket that they'll come and, you know, give it in something. You know, soon enough they have more money and they keep on returning and then they bring their kids, you know, and who then become teenagers. So, you know, you're building a relationship, so cater for them too, you know, in the right way, yeah? So basically what you need to understand is who are you, what are their needs, you know, and how are you addressing them? How do they influence your design that you're working on, you know? So what we had here is you were talking about partners, you know? Then we have the customer, you know, like who's maybe ordering it from you that you or you hope to sell to, you know, if you want to kind of pass on your service idea to someone, you know? And then there'll be the kind of the end users, you know? And then, so what I said, that the paying ones, then you'll have those who work there, who are delivering the service, you know? Don't forget them. It's really important, you know? So, working, no, I don't have a, you know, those ones who are really delivering the service, you know? And, So there's, you know, from Philips, I, you know, it was fantastic, the case about the hospital environments, you know, that how they really went ahead. They sat days and days in hospitals, and they were watching. They were watching how things are done. I was in one of these cases, you know, where they do this sort of and also I can't remember that, you know, there's a imaging machine delivered by Philips, you know, that helps them kind of find where is the artery, the clogged artery, and then they put the little balloon inside, you know, and expand it, you know, and I was sitting in there for one day making notations on how that works, you know, to understand where's the patient, where's the staff, you know, who are behind the leaded glass, you know, and who are kind of doing the things to the patient, you know, where, you know, how does the space work, and you know, it's really important if you have this sort of environments to be able to go and already learn. If you're improving something, for example, you're proposing a service that will improve the already the status there. That it's not only about the patient, it's about the nurses and the doctors, you know, and their workspaces and, you know, really like, you know, is this in the way, you know, and where are the remote controls, you know, and how are the displays laid and, you know, what kind of, you know, and look at their innovation, how they set up their environment so that they can get their work done. You know, sometimes really mad stuff that they have to do because how it was designed just doesn't serve them. So, you know, in that sense, you know, those who work, you know, I've sat in a hotel. I was in a design hotel in Montreal for 3 days. It was really mad. It was, you know, and we were just watching how that hotel works. You know, so understand those. They're really important because, you know, if they're happy, you know, and they can do their work well, they will be in the end also bringing in more profit. So you know, so all these, map out your stakeholders, understand what is their role, you know, and how do they work in it, you know, and you know, or if it's the customer, paying customer, who are their stakeholders, who do you need to be kind of also addressing, you know, inside of the organization or so forth, yeah? So it can be really complex, but I recommend, you know, I'll give you here an anecdote. I've just worked on a project, just finished working on a project where we were making a tool. But this was a tool that, online tool that was passed down. So I don't even know when this project started, you know, and there was like, the team has changed meanwhile and whatever, and so there was no proper handover of the project. So basically, I was the business owner on the project, and I got really involved. It was my, you know, like my task to get it up and running, you know, and get it serving our internal clients and so forth. And then on the IT side, we had a completely brand new team, and then we started doing this sort of autopsy on the project because, you know, no one came to tell No one came to tell who was it for, what was the, you know, we just assumed, you know, we saw how far the tool had been developed, and then we started kind of figuring out how do we get it to work, you know. And very recently, we started in April, and a month ago, together with my colleague from the concept owner from the IT side, we realized, you know what? Because it seems somehow schizophrenic, the tool could not serve two needs, you know? There were two kind of needs that were tearing it apart, and from one end, we said, it's unacceptable, it's not delivering this. And the other part is saying, unacceptable, it's not delivering this. And we're trying to kind of bring it together, and then we realized that, you know what? We don't have the stakeholder analysis. We don't know whose needs this was served for. So now it's being verified. It's being tested by people who perhaps were not the ones that it was designed for. But we don't know. So this was a fantastic case where, you know, I really missed this. You know, like, where's this? You know, and why did... And then I kicked myself, you know, why in April, why didn't I start with this? You know? So this is one of those cases where you really realize that the system is built, and it's built in technological choices have been made in such a way that it can't serve certain stakeholders' needs. And then that stakeholder kind of steps in and starts demanding it. And then later on you realize that, you know what, that stakeholder is kind of a second tier. It's not the first tier stakeholder. Or maybe that need came later on. Anyway, so it's really interesting in that sense. Right. So you know what? What I'll do now... Oh, why don't we take a little pause? Any questions, anything anyone would like to contribute from their own experiences or so forth, this point? Yes.
So how do you see that as a stakeholder, almost as the whole phenomenon of them being stakeholders without having any monetary value directly?
Could you refine your question? I don't quite understand what you...
How do you see groups that have social power but no monetary power?
Yes. Strong stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Need to be taken into account, you know, so at least count them in. They might not be right now, today, bringing the money in, but at the same time, you know, they might be bringing other customers. Surely enough, they're not stakeholders for the rest of the, I mean, they're not teenagers for the rest of their lives, you know?
But, for example, it's more common for someone to go to a place that's popular.
Yes. Obviously, yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 Good point. Yeah, no, I find it a great point. Yeah. So basically, what I could add is
the
social power, it goes in here, isn't, doesn't it? Yes. Wouldn't go here. Great, thanks. Any other thoughts?
I can already see the name is quite good. They are grocery store. We also have youngsters who will be willing to just hang out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's strict law, and we need to look after them. And also, they are under, like,
Yeah, so you're building a relationship with them already. Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, I'll just add it here because, you know, build a relationship with future paying clients or customers. Right. Yeah.
Hang around spot. I don't know why any shops I haven't seen it, you know, happen.
Yeah, that's actually true. The thing about the shopping mall, like the office, they also don't have the space for them. They often hang around, but what can they do there?
They have a space for children.
Yeah.
On the doors, smoking. But it's really interesting the dynamic between the workers, the paying customers, and the ones that hold the social power. Because if we take teenagers in a shopping mall, for example, their paying customers are usually their parents.
Yes.
They're at the same time to drive them or something.
Yeah.
And their friends are working there.
Yes. Yes. I don't know so much about it, so I won't be able to kind of contribute a lot here, but you know, case by case, study this carefully, you know. That's the point here that, you know, really beware. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting to look into teenagers. I took a glance at teenagers a couple of years ago, and it was astonishing how much purchasing power actually teenagers have. And how they're often ignored by, you know, by companies who could be really addressing them much more. And the point is that teenagers, they still live at home. So they've got the wallet is from the parents, yeah? And then when they move and they come to study in the university, then their pockets are empty. Like, they go home for the weekend to eat. You know, so really, you know, in that sense, you know, the teenager is really like... Quite a opportunity if addressed correctly. Yeah.
Well, is it so that it would be really nice to ask in that moment that when they are starting entering the university in a way, what would you do if you had that kind of money? Because they are in a way in the position that they have their own life. They are trying to make the path, pave the way for their own being.
Yeah.
So they have the momentum there.
Yes.
Not money.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes. There's only the sort of back to school, but that's really for like elementary school kids, you know, get a new pencil case type of a, you know, or get a new office chair type of advert. Mm.
We have our kids, they could easily implement some kind of package for dining dorm rooms, but small apartments.
Good point. Right. So if we now look at a little bit like, oh yeah, there's one more thing. You know, I kind of left it for the last because we just not talked about the stakeholders and know your customer, or you know, like know a little bit what you're doing. Oh, I've left this, you know, huge space here in between, but let's see if we can still fill it. You know, yes, yes, yes. The case I'll show you now is, it was really like, you know, the starting point is, what is the corporate strategy, you know? So that was the starting point for that. And of course, you know, then that's kind of the Nokia corporate strategy, you know? But really, what is, you know, is it your own business? What is your strategy, you know? Like, so then... Focus on the strategy, really. Don't forget. So, if you're working in a larger corporation, you know, so that it's not your little startup and you're still kind of figuring out what is your field, you know, and it's kind of, you know, then this is probably, I don't know so much about the small companies, you know, but it could be that it's still developing at that point, you know, and you don't know it. But if you're in a larger company or serving a customer, you know, find out. You know, and keep on focusing on that unless you're explicitly told to do otherwise. Because this is really, you know, like, this is the direction that they have decided that they're going in, you know? And if you're doing something else than this, if you're not serving this, it's probably not worth much in the larger scale. Unless, you know, they've really asked you for a new disruptive kind of entry or a proposal or something, you know, alternative opportunity. So don't forget this. Right. So I'll talk now a little bit about deliverables, because obviously, you know, if you're taking all this, you know, all the insights that we've been talking about the stakeholders, you know, and you're, you know, and you want to kind of bring this into ideation where you start kind of...
I'm a bit simple. I'm quite a small guy, so I'm starting to wake up what's going on. So you cannot always... please everyone's needs as the stakeholders.
No.
But when you make, at what point do you make decisions that, okay, we have this and this insight, so
yes.
Where in this model you have the point of making decision that we have these seven insights about these groups of people, and okay,
yes.
We focus on these two. So
yes.
Come through the strategy or...
Yes. For example.
When,
yeah.
At what point in this, your model, is there a point where you have to decide?
The analysis. So I've been now talking quite a bit of the research, you know, and in the analysis phases you... with the strategy, or perhaps you know, you've received also a topic from your customer, you know, or from, you know, whatever's your, you know, so at that point you start looking, what is the relevance of all of this in the light of this and the strategy, you know, what is the relevance? So let me write that down. I wouldn't forget them. They're the one with the money.
But you can please everybody.
Yeah, but you know, you could figure out how. What is, you know, I would really go ahead and find out, you know, because if they're the ones who pay, you know, if you really think about it, you know, you need to kind of, in the end, you need to pay your salaries, you know, and somehow. So you need to make a good kind of sustainable business. So really, the parents and the grandmothers. For example, if they're the ones that you see that they have the time, they come there with the kids, you know, they drive them there, you know, they might be funding for it, you know, find out what are their inner drivers. Why would they be bringing the money to your business and not to some other one? Can you please them in somehow, you know? Is there something that, you know, they drive them to the mall and then the parents go like, you know, so hey, that's an opportunity. Could you maybe... entertain them somehow, or give them something, you know, or do they see that, you know, that you're giving something kind of a greater value to the teenagers, you know, than just kind of, I don't know, you know, glittery shoes.
Do we talk about family ecosystem or something like that? What,
Yeah, you could be looking for that, yeah. You know, like, are the ones who bring the teenagers there, are they kind of a potential customer? Could you make more money off of them? Or is it that they have some other motives, that they see that you're doing something good for their teenager? So, you know, that you're selling the glittery shoes, but also they've got really good soles inside, so they keep the, you know, the feet healthy, and, you know, so they're like, you know what, I want to bring to your shop because you actually also take good care of my teenager. Yeah, so tap into their, yeah. Right, so, you know, then start the filter for the relevance. Relevance, and then we have the strategy, we've got the topic, and then start, you know, so now you need to make your deliverables. You know, you've done all this research, you've dived into it, you know, and then, you know what, you need to communicate it. You've got a probably a team coming in, you're going to start ideating together. You know, what is the service you might have in your customer might be coming in with a couple of stakeholders. They have no idea what you've been up to. You know, you've been doing this research, you know, and together you're going to start working on the opportunity here. This ideation will deliver the opportunity. So start working on the opportunity, you know. But they have no idea what you've been doing. Or you've got a design team and they come with their own ideas. So you need to help them to step into the kind of the feet of, for example, to understand who are the humans that we're talking about. You know, so how do you kind of bridge the gap? You've got a kind of a maybe half an hour in the beginning of a one-day workshop, you know, and you need to be able to pass all this information to them. So you need to deliver it in a way that they can kind of just take the information, you know, and run with it. So, you know, think about handouts, think about posters, you know, think about tools where one of the things that I really love when it comes to kind of the humans is like personas. Now, personas is a kind of a, there are many interpretations into personas, but, you know, how I describe it is it's a bit of a kind of a abbreviation of a certain type of people, and then you bring them to life, you know, you can tell what they are, you know, like they live in this sort of life situation, you know, and their values are like this, you know, and they're on daily kind of routine level, their needs are this, you know, and they aspire to that sort of things, and this is their social network, and these are their favorite, you know, color it in, you know. Don't make it too detailed so that you kind of get stuck on, like, oh, why does she wear a blue wristwatch type of a thing, you know, but a little bit kind of bring someone to life and have a couple of different ones, you know, and they represent then these stakeholders, you know, that you'll have, that you're designing for. You know, so the personas is really lovely. Look into that if you want to find out more. You know, there's quite a bit of theory on this, you know, and they can be really complicated and really simplified. Find your way. One thing I really love, I've used this. Let me see. Day in life. Day in life scenario. This is really beautiful. Or like the experience flow. You could say, you know, if it's just one particular service that you're looking into, you know, if you look at Arkiosk, you know, how people come in, you know, what do they come to get, you know, and then how do they get done what they need before they go to the cash register, before they walk out, you know, and that sort of thing, you know. You could create a day in a life scenario, you know, make a big poster, you know, so we've got this persona and then this is their day in life, you know, and if you really start designing for the service for them, you know, a day in life is kind of a bit of, it could be just an experience flow scenario, you know, but if you can make a big poster of that, then people can stand there and they can start kind of, they can identify moments of opportunity and start kind of ideating around, okay, you know, so why does this person do it like that? They could be doing like this, you know, and you can come up with shortcuts or opportunities where you could sell more or whatever, you know? So that's really beautiful. It gets people standing, you know, you can have this sort of big poster and you can start really, you know, you interact with one another, and when you're standing up. When you're walking, you know, your ideas flow better. So get people up, you know, don't let them sitting, you know, in the workshop or whatever. So that's one thing that I really love about kind of end user needs, you know. And there's many other methods, but I'm just pointing out my favorite ones here. So these are kind of, you know, if I'm talking about deliverables now here, you know, so the material that you can use in a workshop, for example, think about handouts, you know, something that they can easily leaf through, you know, make notations into when it comes to the trends or so forth. Design. We've got things like mood boards. We've got colors, materials, charts, where really, like, you've got pieces and bits of kind of plastics and fabrics and, you know, glued together so that you kind of start getting... There are specialists, really, you know, who are specialized in doing this sort of work. So this is one of those things that you might be looking at. Demonstrators, fantastic stuff, you know. Like, whenever I have a chance to get some, you know, technology researchers to come and bring their demonstrators in and so that we can look at the you know, the really amazing stuff that they've done that is just on a prototype level, you know, it might not even have any function, but you can experience it, then you can start ideating what could that be used for. That's fantastic. So get the demonstrators in. So that's on the technology. Of course, you can make all sorts of roadmaps. Demonstrators. Yeah, so that's a little bit, you know, about the deliverables here. Let me see, am I missing out on something? Yeah, and of course, you know, if you talk about the competition, you know, then kind of, you know, sometimes proper benchmarks are nice, you know, so that you can, you know, you've really kind of broken it into pieces, you know, and you've analyzed it thoroughly and strengths and weaknesses, and this is how they do it, then, you know. It, you know, some go, you know, when it's technology, they go ahead and have devices X-rayed and, you know, to understand really what is the chip structure. And, you know, so, it, you know, it depends on what depth you go into, you know, but and what you're benchmarking. But it's really good, you know, if you explain how is it different from Mars, you know, and what could we learn from this, you know, and so forth. So think of what kind of deliverables you need in relation to what kind of situation you're going into to kind of start then ideating. So, and as a final point then here is that once you've done your deliverables, you know, and you've defined what is this field that you work in, you make an ideation session and you start formulating what is our service going to be like, create the vision, and you can say this is what we're going to do. And then you can keep your focus on it. And at every single point, when you're going through the ideation, you're starting to kind of weed out all the extra bits, you know, and start focusing your design on the concept creation level and so forth. You can always return to this material, your insights. You can return to your vision and you can say, are we answering to what we said that we would answer to? You know, are we still serving the final purpose? You know, because it's so easy to kind of drift, you know, and start doing something else. So always return to your insights until you're on that level that you've got kind of scenarios, for example, that you can go to end users and start probing them. But be careful with the end users. They don't, if you're really making kind of forward-leaning, forward-thinking things, they're so, you know, we're used to that remote control is this, yeah? This is what we're used to. So if you're proposing that remote control would be kind of this, they won't get it. So be careful there. You might get, you know, wrong answers. Go ahead.
When you build this kind of service concept where you have number of stakeholders and they need to show green lights,
yes,
to go forward, is it that the consultation with the stakeholders goes with the research analyst phase as kind of unofficial? That, or does it need to be? I'm thinking the way, the point where you have to bring
Yes.
You could just talk.
Yeah.
I have this and this kind of idea.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the machine? And
yeah.
I don't see anything.
Yeah, good point. You need to be very careful with the stakeholders. Because there are different ways of thinking, different ways of understanding concepts, you know? So I realize, you know, it's funny that I've learned it only so late, but I've now really started paying attention. We talked about it yesterday, you know, that some people are very concrete, you know? So any kind of, you know, you paint the conceptual scenario and they will take it really literally. They will kind of start asking, so why do we have this kind of line here, and you know, and when it was just a thought combining two things, you know? And that they will really take it. So be very careful in how you communicate so that it's not taken too early as the final thing. Another thing is, though, that stakeholders are really important at every phase. Engage them in the research and analysis phase. Ask their, you know, what is the relevance here? Take them into the ideation. Make sure that they're part of the concept creation and they own the vision. Get them, that's what I'm saying, get them to be the owners. Because when they feel that what you've created is their baby, they're not going to kill it. You know? Really, they'll own it and they'll start kind of nurturing it. But if it's something done behind closed doors and then you come and do a handover, they don't get it. So then they start kind of doing it again and it'll go all wrong. So, you know, get them involved and make sure that they really feel the ownership, because basically you're doing it for them. Yeah. So that's good. I could show the video now. Oh yeah, I can't reach that. So a little bit before we're...
I could have one question for that.
Yes, go ahead.
It's a customer case and they are just about to change their strategy. So they are forming their new strategy. So where do we get... On what strategy do we focus?
Ask them if you can be involved in creating that strategy. Have you asked them?
Not really. No,
yeah. Take it up. Take it up. Yeah, because, you know, surely you don't want to be doing work that actually becomes then irrelevant in 2 weeks' time, you know, or 2 months' time.
No, I understand that this one, maybe for the both sides, it's a hard situation, and it's really sure what we do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the customer is thinking like, well, you know, we just need to kind of, it's a student project or whatever. I don't know about your situation, you know, but they're kind of humoring you and wondering why are we doing this, and you're wondering, like, what's the point of doing this? Altogether not the best situation. Good. So what I'll be showing you is a video that was... public deliverable of a project I did together. I told you I was in the steering group of the nanotechnologies productization project. And it's called Human Form that we'll be seeing. And basically it was a collaboration between NRC, Eurolab in Cambridge. We have, at least at the time, we had our Nanosciences Development Center in Cambridge, and then Nokia Design had a unit at the time that I collaborated with that was making this sort of future experiences, kind of defining them, and in collaboration, of course, with our consumer insights in the sort of on the behaviors side of future behaviors, current behaviors, future behaviors. And the point was really to start looking at, you know, if we had, there was a video, you can look it up, well, maybe it comes at the end of this, but there was already a concept made before, and it was so far in the future that what this project wanted to do was kind of start, you know, taking small steps of how do we start productizing some nanotechnologies, combining it with current, already known technologies, and so forth. So then this demonstrator will, or this video will demonstrate now how how we saw one of the kind of the closest future concepts pan out or opportunities pan out. And what was really remarkable for kind of a large corporation point of view is that when you do this sort of projects, you can really create a lot of IPR. So there was a huge amount of patents that came out of the project. And that's, of course, you know, one of the parts of making money in the future. Actually, it's this morph case that was the older project. It was done before I joined Nokia. A really interesting concept that was then, you know, quite far in the future. So how do we start kind of prototyping in that direction? Yeah. Oh, thank you for your attention. It's been a